Hi everyone, this is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio Program In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, October 21st, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL Research from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch for further instructions. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody on board and ready?
Yeah.
We are.
Yep.
All right. Our opening quote comes from the May 16th, 2002 channeling. Quo says, "Magic lies within the feelings that synchronicities, dreams, visions, coincidences, magical experiences, in general, create and rouse within the self. These emotions are precious, precious things, and throughout the incarnation, each is working to purify, beautify, and make more truthful those expressions of pure being that emotions are."
I remember Shakespeare said, "Truth and beauty were two of the highest things in the world." So, synchronicities, insights, in general, the magic that happens to us once in a while, is placed pretty high in Ra's feeling of things compared to Shakespeare. And I agree with Shakespeare. In our lives, we might be able to pinpoint those that occurred because of an insight that we had, a hunch, a feeling about something that we followed and it worked out really well. Or an idea about what was going to come immediately thereafter, which turned out to be true. Like when you feel that the phone's going to ring and you know who's calling. And sure enough, that's what happens. Another way of tuning into the silent dance that goes on so rhythmically in nature and when we're really with it in us. Sometimes our egos get in the way. Sometimes we think, oh, I couldn't possibly follow that hunch because that makes no sense. I can't defend it. Get out of the way. Or pride gets in the way. You think, I'm not going to be a silly person. I am going to be a logical, sane, sensible person. I am not going to follow this hunch because it makes no sense and I don't want to be silly. When we are ignoring our hunches, ignoring that little feeling in the tummy that you get or wherever you get your little feelings, that says, do it, do it, do it. This is right. This is right. Or have you considered this? Please consider this. Think about this. Wait for that little tickle to come in the part of the brain we want to develop in this lifetime, whatever else we do. The part of the brain that thinks with the heart. It's the insight intelligence of the brain, of the heart. However you want to say it, heart, insight, intelligence. Point at which you get an insight which is at odds with logic or with fact as you know it. In which case you have to decide between the little tickle being something that needs to be followed and something that needs to be ignored. Delvings into the dance of nature. That silent, rhythmical, pulsing dance that we sometimes feel when we're very lucky through meditation, obviously through drugs, which simply cut away a lot of the it all away, and all of a sudden you're seeing, feeling into the rhythmic dance. It's much better if you do it without drugs, obviously. Do it with meditation. Do it with the silence. Very effective. Very useful. It will work for you. How long it will take for it to work for you, but it will work for you in the end. Keep working on it. No kidding. Every day, put in your time. I don't know how much per day is right. What was that bunch? 20 minutes. I'm not remembering the name of it right now, but that's what they thought that the right time was. 20 minutes a day, twice, times two. Or 5 minutes a day, times two. The difference is not extraordinary. Once truly dropped the present moment of the ongoing present moment and dropped into the now. Drop out, tune in. The ongoing, 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 going, going, going. Must do, must do, must do. Drop out of that. And be now. Be here now. Oh, I love to be here now. I love to hang out in the now. It is a wonderful. I never know why people object so strenuously to meditation or say that it doesn't work. It works for people who can't meditate. It works for me. I've never gotten very good at it, but I keep at it. And you know why? Not just because I think it's right. That's a big part of it, yeah. But there's something else. It's rewarding. Wonderful. I'm very sensitive to relationships, so if I'm alone, I'm dropping directly into the now for me. If I'm with other people, I drop into our combined now, which is more complex. It's still wonderful. And when you meditate with a group that's large enough that you cannot possibly meditate with someone else, one other person in the group, but you have to take them all, then you become meditating with all. And that is the best meditation. That group meditation which brings you even past yourself into the now of the now of the now, the center of the heart of our combined consciousnesses, for we all are one. Then I generally do alone or with one other person. I love group meditation. I hope to create the opportunity for more of them in our home. As it is, we do have one every week on Sunday. But my room is small, and there are not too many people we can accommodate, so no one will work it out. Back to magic. Then there are those who appreciate it and who run with it, who feel very comfortable with that magical coincidence of insight, of synchronicity. Joy it is. I pray you will join me. Shall we dance? Amen.
Amen. Carla, you're always on, but thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Our first question of the day comes from Storm Shadow via Bring Forth. Storm Shadow writes, in one of the readings, Ra attributes Franklin Roosevelt's quick progress through the energy centers to previous achievements and the, quote, relative comfort and leisure of its early existence. In the Buddhist story, Siddhartha was born a prince and spent the first half of his life in almost gratuitous wealth and sensual occupation. It almost seems to me that the rich have an advantage, even as spiritual seekers, at the very least because they have time and self-determination that they may use to choose to seek that the poor do not. Is this a spiritual constant, or do you believe that this is an anomaly that is unique to our planetary societal structure? Is the best bet for the poor seeker to work towards material gain first, or to accept his current lot and watch his experience drip by day, little able to engage in the work he wishes to, but in faith that if he does the best with what he has been given and incurs no serious karma, he will be able to choose a more materially abundant life next time that affords him this opportunity, and pray that he remembers enough through the veil to avail himself of it. Who will be our first taker to this question?
I'll grab it. If we are to believe those of Ra, it is a crapshoot as to whether one's planet becomes a rich man, poor man planet or not. Ra's planet was not. We gathered that it avoided that sin, and I do think it is a sin of the humane kind. It's a man-made sin. Sorrow, and yet we pursue it. Take number two. I do not feel that it is necessary. Well, while I acknowledge that it is more advantageous to be born rich because you'd have one less thing to worry about, as far as I'm said, poor wealthy simply don't use the time. They have no interest in spiritual seeking, and they waste it. They waste their wealth on material gain and material doings. Let's get famous, I guess would be the name of that game. Given that that is so, it is also true that there is no estate in life that is so terribly poor that one cannot find the time to meditate, find the time to become in the inner life what has not been given one in the outer life. Thread the needle here with me and simply do the very best you can to live a life of honor and ethic and spiritual seeking, no matter what your situation, materially speaking. achieving great spiritual gain. Because the gain that you want to find for yourself is a better balance within your heart for those three great posts of love, power, and wisdom. All of these three have tremendous advantages. The open heart, the advanced mind, and the will. None of them deserves to be left out of meditation. Or I even suggest Jim, Don, and I meditate on one of those three per day, since we had that three neatly commingled among our group. Too much wisdom obviously cannot help one. Two are very, very wise walk a tightrope through this world because they're trying to stay sane. Too much love is not so great an idea, as I have demonstrated amply in my life. Whatever it looks like in the inner plane, it, on the outer plane, it looks like I was a doormat and a fool. Too much power. And you start forgetting that it is good to be wise or loving. And you just develop the will, which is the exercise of the service to self entity. Consequently, you have to delimit yourself from that love of power if you find yourself wanting to go in that direction, unless you want to become a politician. Okay, I'm done. Anybody else?
It's a good point that you made about people being wealthy, not necessarily utilizing their afforded leisure, and so it might not necessarily be a benefit for spiritual growth. And I don't think that Roosevelt and Siddhartha would necessarily be a very good comparison for that kind of reason, because from what I understand of the story of the Buddha, is that while Siddhartha was born in wealth, and sort of shielded from the outside world, he didn't really witness any kind of suffering, any hunger, because he was confined within his palace walls, until one day he left his palace walls and witnessed the suffering that he had never witnessed before, and was so distraught by this that he left all the wealth behind and set off on a journey to try to understand what the suffering was, and he even subjected himself to the suffering. And from what I remember, at the point of his supposed enlightenment, he had given nearly everything up completely and was living in basically complete poverty. And it was not until he left the wealth that he was able to find his peace. So I think that's a good point, that a good environment for spiritual seeking. But I do think there is an element, like you said, it is easier when you're afforded leisure, and Ra made some pretty good points and made it a point to say that leisure was an important part. When people have the leisure that allows them to contemplate the Law of One, they even said that some of the wanderers that came specifically for that purpose, to try to create more leisure time for people who didn't have the leisure time to contemplate the Law of One. So I do think that there is an aspect of being able to have your basic needs met, your survival needs, your basic emotional needs, and if you're always struggling to survive, if you're always trying to figure out where your next meal is going to come from, and you're stressed out about all these different things in your life, I think it can be harder to find that center within yourself that allows you to rise up into the higher needs and higher spiritual needs and start to contemplate the higher spiritual needs. But I don't think that it's necessarily a requirement, like you were saying, Carla. I think anybody in any situation has that center of being that they can find, and there's love in every single moment, whether it's a moment of leisure or a moment of work, that love can be sought in any moment, and anybody in any situation to that realization and make the choice to seek that love, despite what their outer circumstances are. So I do think it helps a lot to have your basic needs met and not have to worry about working, you know, more than 80 hours a week, which some people in this world have to do in order to survive. But I do think that it's still possible. And to address Storm Shadow's question about whether it's better to work for material gain or to accept the circumstances that one has, I don't see those as necessarily mutually exclusive. If you have this desire, if you feel like it's necessary for you to live your life and follow your path to gain some sort of material wealth in order to give your service, then I absolutely think that's something you should do while at the same time accepting the circumstances that you're in and that you have to go through in order to gain that wealth. But I don't think that gaining wealth is a necessary part of spiritual enlightenment at all. And that's my thoughts on the subject.
I think another way to see or to take Storm Shadow's question deeper, it seems that he or she is asking what the role of the environment is for the individual spiritual seeker and what impact the environment has. And I think one's environment, one's circumstances, one's context is very important and has a profound effect upon the individual. Ra basically says as much when they are describing that weird situation whereby Carla's soul was almost stolen or tricked into negative time-space. And they say, where's the quote? they say, for the positive entity which incarnates into negative space-time will not find it possible to maintain any significant positive polarity, as negativity, when pure, is a type of gravity well, shall we say, pulling all into it. And they go on to describe that situation. So even ones in that is, of course, an extreme manifestation, but it does illustrate that that there is an influencing by the environment upon the individual. At the same time, I think one's will is paramount, and what one does with the environment is the greater determining factor, and I'm echoing Austin and Carla here, rather than, that is, what one does with the environment is greater import than what is actually happening within the environment, and that's one of the messages of the Law of One, that no matter what seems to be transpiring around you, all is catalyst. And with the proper orientation of mind, all situations can be utilized for accelerating spiritual growth, be it wealth or poverty, abundance or paucity of personal time. And I was going to say what Austin said, too, regarding people. Generally, it seems the seeker should meet their basic needs first. And one can conjecture that one of the reasons that there is such a minimum, it seems, of spiritual seeking on this planet is due to the fact that so many people are struggling just to meet their basic needs. And in that hierarchy of needs, they can't rise or transcend those basic levels to move on to contemplation of higher things. And my final thought is that all which does occur seems to be a function of free will, so it's presumed that if a soul is experiencing a circumstance of poverty or wealth, that that is happening due to their own free will choice, whether they've advanced to the point that they are themselves making those decisions in between incarnations, or their higher self is doing it for them when they're at the earlier stages of third density. I don't think in the law of one cosmology there are any victims in the universe. There's only individuals and groups experiencing the fruits of their own free will, which, again, is not a message to not have compassion for those suffering or those in poverty because, you know, they chose it. Let's let them have their own experience. I think we should all strive to help one another in difficult circumstances.
To build a little bit on what Gary just said, our third density experience seems to be composed, as Ross said, of three 25,000-year cycles. Three major cycles to make up a master cycle. The new entities to the Earth and entering in the first cycle very likely have the intelligent energy of the Logos to work with, but most of their catalyst is given to them. As they progress and gain experience in third density on any planet, then there is what Ross said. Actually, it happens right away. There is a seniority of vibration that determines when entities incarnate. And as we go further along and the entities get more experience, they choose more and more of what is going to be their situation into which they will incarnate if in each lifetime. And this means that everybody then begins to choose everything. They choose their parents, they choose brothers, sisters, friends, they choose health or illness or some mixture, they choose wealth or poverty or some mixture, city or country, what country they're in. All of these things are free will choices, just like Gary said. And the only variable is how will the entity respond to the situation into which it has placed itself. And each entity hopes that certain lessons will be learned as a result of what has been learned and what has not been well learned previously. So there are no mistakes, as Ross said, and these experiences that we all have in our incarnations are experiences that we have set ourselves up for. We've put together all the pieces of the puzzle. When we come into incarnation, we can reassemble it as we had chosen it previously.
Well said, everyone. Does anybody like to take a second pass at the question?
No, I think it was a really good question, though.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the question.
Yeah, thanks, Storm Shadow.
Storm Shadow.
Moving along to one of our favorite people, JP, sent in a question via email. He writes, "Dear Carla and crew, have any of your many contacts ever spoken about the concept of time travel? This is a very esoteric subject, but must have some credibility. For example, the Course in Miracles extensively talks about how the Holy Spirit collapses timelines and changes the course of our lives and deletes life lessons that are no longer needed to learn because we learn them in some other manner and no longer need that exact lesson. Has anyone else ever confirmed this or any other aspects of time doors, time dilation, travel, or alteration? It is said when you turn around and go back for something and it's gone, or now in another location, it is because we slipped a cog in the time stream, or time slips. You and Monica spoke about this in a past show, about markers on her kitchen counter just appearing there. Any comments on this subject?"
As far as Confederation entities mentioning time travel, I ran a search on our archives, and there wasn't a whole lot with the specific words of time travel, but there was one interesting paragraph that I found that is, I believe it's Kuo. Yes, it is Kuo saying, "When entities speak of time travel, they speak in everyday 3D terms of science fiction, an impossibility. However, in the time-space or metaphysical universe, it is the only way to travel, shall we say. For it is the field and space that which flows. Oh, I'm sorry. For it is the field and space is that which flows. The inner planes of your illusion are within time-space. Your thoughts, before they reach the conscious word-making process, are in time-space. consciousness, that ground of being which creates a unity of the universe, manifests in time-space. So they're basically saying that, well, I don't know exactly what they're saying, but that time-space, when we're in time-space, essentially the only way to travel is through time, and I think that we're able to navigate time in a much like we navigate space where we are now. But, you know, obviously we can't navigate the infinity of space as we are right now. We're sort of limited to our local space, and we can kind of fly across to the other side of the world, but there's still infinity space out there. I think it's similar with time as well, as we can't necessarily go through any time and all time when we're in time space, but we're limited to a certain sort of window of time, sort of like we're limited to a window of space where we are now. But that's just my personal conjecture.
Federation began to discuss time-space and space-time with the slash in between each one. In answer to Don's question concerning Dewey Larson's physics, so his discussion is based on a physics equation, which is V, velocity, equals S over T, or V equals T over S. In other words, V, velocity, moving through into the future, equals space-time, or it equals time-space. There is a mismatch in between the original concept of love and the concept of energy that the energy to create things. You can either mismatch it slightly towards things, that's space-time, where all we have all these objects. Or you can minimize that and come out with a mismatch in which brings you into the inner planes, and that is brings you into time-space or metaphysical space. Now, in space-time, space is river, as Austin said. In time-space, you're looking at a holistic or spherical model of the universe in which now is at the center and all possible times collapse into the now from various parts of the sphere. Hence, various words like collapsing timelines from those who channeled the Course in Miracles. If you take the global concept of the universe, you can see that there is no way to go from here to there in a linear fashion because there's no line. There's no line. It's all spherical. So basically, you sort of like take your aim from where you are to where you wish to be and then move in that specific way. And it's sort of like dialing up a phone or turning on a TV. You get a certain channel. And you tune into space-time somewhere else. But it's not just somewhere else, it's somewhere else, if you want to. So they're not thinking, oh, I'm going to do time travel today. They're thinking, I'm going to travel today. Shall it be this time, you know, this particular time, or shall it be that particular time? Because where they are, there's no particular time. It's just time. The way space is just space to us. When you switch it around, it really makes a kind of sense. And you can see that if we want to get from place to place, we do have to travel in a linear fashion. We only have one one place. It's a locale, and so we have to fill in this time without moving from this time. We can't do a thing without time. We can just move in space. So if people are living in the inner planes, or if they are some of our unseen friends, or if many other ifs that have to do with the universe of time and space, they always doing travel in time, because they're but time. And so they travel from this time to this time. They don't have to live in any time. They're living in the now. Time space is a very helpful place to live. And I think we attempt to bring ourselves into being able to when we meditate. So Larson's physics is at the bottom of the Roz discussion of not time travel, but travel to another time. It's only time travel from our point of view. It's not time travel from their point of view. If they want to go anywhere in time, they've got to cinch up their belts and travel. Time or to somebody else's time. They still have to choose to go from the now, which would be here. You are here. Well, in time-space, it's you are now. And then you see, okay, you have to go this, this, and go down one, okay. Mm-hmm. And then you do that, and you get to when you want to be. All right, that's what I have to offer.
The consideration of time travel is beyond my pay grade. One thing that does come to mind is that there is... among the pantheon of conspiracy theories is an event that was alleged to have happened in the 40s called the Philadelphia Experiment,
mm-hmm.
in which the Navy is, supposedly had used technology derived from Tesla's work in order to cloak and or time travel with one of their warships. And Ross seems to confirm, if Ross' statement
can be...
thought
they were cloaking. The time travel part was a great surprise.
Oh, that's what is said to
yeah,
have
that's
happened.
What they were trying to do
just
in the cloaking. Experiment, but all of a sudden they popped up in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. Oops. Used
wrong.
Too much that time.
Wrong button. Don't press the red one next time. And if Ra can be believed, Ra in Session 26 confirms that they didn't say what precisely was done or what happened, just that there was this experimentation. So that opens the door to the possibility that from our perspective and our space-time experience, perhaps time travel is possible. And that's the only contribution I have to make to that question.
That's pretty good in that it opens up the suggestion that magnetism may have something to do with it.
Free energy?
I don't know what I'm trying to say. Let's see.
Is it free energy? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, he was looking for free energy. And I was trying to say, what's the planetary? Not magnetism. I'm back at magnetism.
Electromagnetism?
I'm trying to say that energy which keeps us all where we are.
Gravity.
There you go. That's what I'm trying to say. Now, obviously, he thought that it had something to do with magnetism because he hoiked up this big coil. If the truth, telling the truth about the nature of their experimentation on the East Coast, and worked with that, and it was in the middle of such experiments that this thing from the Navy happened.
Jim, you have a thought on this question?
No, I don't have anything to say. Carla covered everything I could possibly think of.
All right. Then we will move on to JP's second question. And Carla, thanks for being the brains on that previous question, too.
Well, I did some research for Puharich when he was writing about such things, and actually found Tesla's birth certificate.
Wow.
I didn't intend to. I just happened upon it in the Bronx Public Library. It's in their upright file if anybody wants to go see it. There's a copy of it in there. Strange. But at any rate, that was the subject matter of it. So I got more familiar with Tesla's experiments than I would have otherwise.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So something of his wasn't confiscated.
God bless the research, yeah. Always good to have research, no matter on what. Knowledge is good.
So JP's next question begins with a quote from Ra that goes, "The correct portion of your statement is the greater opportunity for service due to the many changes which will offer many challenges, difficulties, and seeming distresses within your illusion to many who then will seek to understand, if we may use this misnomer, the reason for the malfunctioning of the physical rhythms of their planet." So JP asks, does this answer somehow imply that Ra knows or can see the future?
I think we're missing a bit of context for that.
No, did I?
No, I think
I agree.
We missed question.
We missed the thrust of the question.
Yeah.
We missed the thrust of the answer.
So I'll just read the whole thing. I'm not sure exactly what it's about, but we'll figure it out. Don asks, "Would the coming changes as we progress into fourth density..." I'm speaking of changes not only in the physical third density planet due to the heating effect, but also the changes that are heralding fourth density vibrations, such as the ability of people to perform what we term paranormal activities. I'm assuming that both of these are also and will act as catalyst to create a greater seeking. Is this correct? And Ra's full answer is, "I am Ra. This is partially correct. The paranormal events occurring are not designed to increase seeking, but are manifestations of those whose vibratory configurations enables these entities to contact the gateway to intelligent infinity. These entities capable of paranormal service may determine to be of such service on a conscious level. This, however, is a function of the entity and its free will and not the paranormal ability. The correct portion of your statement is the greater opportunity for service to many changes which will offer many challenges, difficulties, and seeming distresses within your illusion to many who then will seek to understand, if we may use this misnomer, the reason for malfunctioning of the physical rhythms of this planet. Moreover, there exist possibility vortices which spiral towards your bellicose actions. Many of these vortices are not of the nuclear war, but of less annihilatory but more lengthy so-called conventional war. This situation is formed in your illusion, would form many opportunities for seeking a service." So with that full question and answer, it seems like JP's asking about how Ra seems to have this vision of the future.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have a full ability to time travel because we're not there yet. What he has is what we have. Possibility, probability, vortices. This could happen, this maybe could happen, this probably won't happen. They're all ifs. You know, when you roll the best in craps or get the best hand in a card game, that it was a very rare probability, possibility, vortices. In other words, it was a result of a rare probability coming. So we know that even the rarest of probabilities, possibilities, can come true. However, we can look at the odds and see, well, here is the greatest of the probability, possibility vortices. at your present time, looking forward from it. And they're saying that if you continue parameter that we understand now to be, the most likely result in the future is going to be fill in the blank. They're not saying it's going to happen. They're saying that they can see the odds of its happening. They have no more idea than we do whether it will happen or not. We haven't thrown that roll yet. We haven't dealt those cards yet. And in addition to all that, where I used the card game as an analogy for exceeding all of those and achieving the fourth density, and that is to put all the cards face up so that everybody knows what everybody else is doing. And supposedly from that point on, people which have the will and the wit to choose the very best of a possibility, probability, which is love. Love eliminates all the odds and becomes the creation of a universe based on love from the local point of view. If we could begin to put our cards down face up in our relationships or in the relationships of our nation states, in other words, if our talking to each other actually served a purpose, we could do a great deal to lessen the imbalances politically and socially among our peoples. It's a matter of having the will and the wit to make the correct choices. And the first choice we would have to make would be not to hold our cards so close to our vest, not to be so clever, not to be so successful in making our will be the will that prevails.
My response would come in two parts, and I think they're just kind of, we'll just paraphrase Carla in its own way. And the first part of my response is actually a riffing off of what you said, Carla, about the card game, which hadn't occurred to me previously until you said it. And it's interesting, like, you just opened up some insight for me that I hadn't seen in that card game analogy. And that's that it also highlights, it also points to love being the beginning of surrender, that the individual stops playing the game on the level of the other card players, stops playing the planetary game of seeking power, advantage, prestige, status, acquiring material wealth, being defended, enhancing the self, so on and so forth, stops playing the game at that level, lays the cards down, and activates the heart chakra and lifts the vision higher. And in so doing, and this is just what you were saying too, Carla, it's you stop operating from the personal will and you begin to open yourself up to the greater will to work through you. And kind of you might put it crudely to say intelligent infinity then begins to sort out our planetary mess through us. It has the greater vision and the greater sense of coherence, and then we become agents of that through love itself and everything that comes above love in the scene from the perspective of the chakras. And the second part of my response, just lost my train. Oh, time travel. And this again is paraphrasing Carla. And it's not, I don't think that Ra necessarily has a sort of psychic, as we would frame it, vision to see into the future per se, though maybe they very well do have that ability given the malleability of time for them. But rather, I think the case is more that they have a lot more information than we do. They can, I believe, see essentially what everybody is doing and thinking on this planet. They can see, they have the bird's eye view, and not just from above looking down, but they can see what's hidden from ourselves in our own subconscious individual minds and in our own racial mind and planetary mind, so on and so forth. And with that information, they can make better predictions and or prognostications. For instance, it's as if they could see, if we were in, say they were doing this just for seeing the future for an individual was driving in a particular direction and couldn't see precisely where they were headed, but at their current trajectory, they're headed towards San Francisco, likely, if they stay on their current course at their current speed with their current resources. And it would be as if Ra saying there's a strong possibility, Vortis, that you're going to wind up in San Francisco if you continue on this course. But, you know, you may make a right at some point. You know, you may make some deviations. You may make a U-turn. There are other possibilities. And that's my thoughts on that question. Austin or Jim?
I think you guys did a great job of bringing that question around to love. It's really interesting that such a simple question can be brought around like that. So I have a relevant Ra quote where they use another analogy that is more relevant to like the surface of the question about how Ra can see or know these things, or the idea of probability, possibility vortices. And Don's asking about Edgar Cayce and Edgar Cayce's prophecies, and Ra's response is, consider the shopper entering the store to purchase food with which to furnish the table for the time period you call a week. Some stores have some items, others have a variant of offerings. We speak of these possibility-probability vortices when asked with the understanding that such are as a can, jar, or portion of goods in your store. It is unknown to us as we scan your time-space whether your peoples will shop hither or yon, can only name some of the items available for the choosing. The, shall we say, record which the one you call Edgar read from is useful in the same manner. There is less knowledge in this material or other possibility, probability vortices, and more attention paid to the strongest vortex. We see the same vortex, but also see many others. Edgar's material could be likened unto 100 boxes of your cold cereal, another vortex likened unto 3 or 6 or 50 of another product which is eaten by your peoples for breakfast. That you will breakfast is close to certain. The menu is your own choosing. The value of prophecy must be realized to be only that of expressing possibilities. Moreover, it must be, in our humble opinion, carefully taken into consideration that any time-space viewing, whether by one of your time-space or by one such as we who view your time-space from a dimension, shall we say, exterior to it, will have a quite difficult time expressing time measurement values. Thus, prophecy given in specific terms is more interesting for the content or type of possibility predicted than for the space-time nexus of its supposed occurrence. So that's a basic explanation of Ra's view of probability, possibility vortices.
And notice that nowhere in all this material does it say they can time travel. They don't talk about that. Because it would be like us saying, well, we were going to space travel today.
They do mention that they could be with us at any of our time, something along those lines.
Probably.
I haven't understood fully.
There's a strong
what that
possibility,
means.
Probability vortex that would be what they said.
Yeah, they did say, it was actually in session one, one of the first things they said is, we are not part of time and thus are able to be with you in any of your times. But that's a very kind of convoluted statement, it seems like. I don't think. Time travel.
No.
Jim, any thoughts on that question?
The information that Ra has, I believe, is also available to our higher selves, which doesn't necessarily mean that our higher self is going to tell us anything about the future, but we can, if we do contact our higher selves, get feelings and inklings about events that we are engaged in and possibility probability vortices as they extend into our future. So if it is of value to us, I think that we can access that, although I don't think it is usually that much of value.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Plenum recently, a friend of ours, moderates Bring Forth Forums, is describing his own contact with the higher self and how he perceives it as a sort of lifting above, gaining of a larger perspective and kind of looking down. So maybe through intuition, hunches, and maybe even clear, acute visions sometimes, the higher self can provide just a little bit more of that roadmap, give one a little greater sense of where one is, so to speak, in the terrain, where one's headed, and what might be a wise decision in order to fulfill one's incarnational desires. Any further thoughts from anybody on that question?
Just that we love you all. Not in reference to anything, but it's getting towards the end of the session, so I wanted to be sure and say that.
We do indeed love you all, and we thank you for your questions, Storm Shadow and JP. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you would like to send us a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, everybody. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
Planets turn and the old stars